Well, Danielle, I'll tell you what, man. After we had two rain delays in the same game, and the rain coming down at Wrigley again in the top of the ninth inning with the top of the Blue Jays order up the bat against Jorge Lopez, I think I can genuinely say this more than I have said it at maybe any other point this season. I was on the absolute edge of my seat. I have said this many times. I don't live and die on every single pitch the Blue Jays throw, mainly because we watch so many games and so on. But boy, I was on the absolute edge of my seat in what was ultimately a 3-2 Blue Jays loss to the Cubs. Jays now falling to 5-16 in one run games on the road this season. That's from Sportsnet Stats. I'll say this though. This is like partially in jest, but I do kind of believe this. On the last AB of the game, it's raining at Wrigley Field. Yes. Rain's coming down pretty hard. We don't know what it looks like right now because, you know, the game's over. But I firmly believe it's pouring in Chicago right now, on the north side of Chicago. Vladdy comes up to bat. He was swinging no matter what.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, he understood what needed to get done at the end there, right? Like, don't get me wrong. Jorge Lopez, pretty good reliever. I know he gave the home run to Barger, but still, pretty good reliever. He was being very careful when he was pitching to Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He was throwing a lot of stuff down and away.
Everything was breaking balls.
Yeah, he did not. He was not taking any chances with the Blue Jays' best batter. But I also believe that Vladdy was not being as
selective.
Selective is a good word. As perhaps as conscientious as he usually would be when we see him at an AB.
Yeah, he understood the assignment very, very clearly. We were all joking about that here at Baseball Control, saying Vlad, and you just saw the quality of the swings there. It didn't matter where that ball was.
Yeah.
Unless it just so happened that the ball would have been center cut, middle.
Exactly, yes.
He would have hit it. But apart from that, he was swinging every single time. He knew exactly what he was trying to do in that particular situation, understanding that the weather, the inclement conditions, were on their way in to the Chicago area yet again. And certainly, I can assure you, Show, nobody, certainly us, we were not going to be tolerating a third weather delay today, especially in the ninth inning. That was not going to happen.
They showed who we assume is the like the groundskeeper or one of the grounds crew, maybe the lead groundskeeper, the head groundsman. But
he's the Grinch.
The Grinch. And I mean, he was dressed pretty normally. He was just like a polo shirt on and some jeans or whatever. But he had like his phone and was kind of pinching and zooming it like you would on a smartphone. And I think he was showing the umpires that there was a big green blob coming in. And I don't know, between Vladdy and the umpire, like, I mean, again, Jorge Lopez pitched pretty well, but with Varsho up before, I mean, Varsho got rung up, but I guarantee you, had that pitch been like a foot below the zone,
he was
getting called for a strike.
100%.
I promise
Ryan
you.
Blakeney, the home plate umpire, did not have a good game to begin with.
He did not.
He was missing some obvious calls, both in terms of, and it worked both ways, frankly. It's not like it was something that was affecting one team more than the other, but the balls and strikes, pretty questionable at times today. He would have rung him up without a shadow of a doubt, even if Jorge Lopez's beautiful looking slider was 3 feet lower than it ultimately indeed was, touching the edge of the strike zone against Dalton Varsho. I can assure you of that match. He would not have required any further assistance to ring somebody up in that moment in the ninth inning with all this. I can only imagine what it looks like now at Wrigley, because it was coming down. It was indeed coming down. And so if this game had progressed another 5-10 minutes, goodness.
We'd be in a delay.
Could you imagine?
For sure.
Just bear with it. Hypothetically, if the Jays would have tied this game, we would have 100% been in another delay.
Yeah, I think because if you're in a one-run game, no matter where you are, even if it's in the ninth inning and you can certainly call it an official game, which certainly I'm certain the Cubs would have pushed for, but I'm also equally as certain that John Schneider would have been like, no, like, we're waiting this out. If we have a chance to win this game, we're waiting it out. I guarantee you that would have happened. So
you don't think John would have just been
no,
like,
no, I don't. I genuinely believe they would have waited until like the nth hour to call this game, because if they were losing like 6-0 or whatever in the ninth inning, yeah, for sure. There's
Do you
no
think
way.
It's just because of the optics of it? Even though it is, we know it's a lot, not a lost season, but things haven't gone great for the Blue Jays, and they're not in a position where they're contending for a playoff spot. Even with that being the case, you think just because of the optics surrounding the situation, John Schneider would have said, nah, we're going to wait this out.
No, I don't think because of optics, but I do believe he, because he like genuinely, in a one-round game, you have a genuine chance to win. Like anything, in a one-round game, truly anything crazy could happen. Even if like Jorge Lopez is on the mound or whoever's at the plate or whatever the situation might be. I don't think it's about optics. I genuinely think he just they want to win as many games as humanly possible, and they would have waited it out. But today, at least, we did not go into a third rain delay, thankfully. But unfortunately, it does mean that the Blue Jays did lose 3-2 to the Chicago Cubs, and it does mean they lose the series in Chicago. They'll try and avoid the sweep tomorrow at Wrigley Field. That's Daniele Franceschi. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. You can give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text us as well, 590-590, name and location. That is the People's Text Line. It is always open. Standard messaging and data rates do apply. We spent a ton of time today, Daniele, because we'll get to Chris Bassitt in a little while, but we spent a lot of time today, whether it was in the pre-pregame show, the pregame show prior to a 2:20 Eastern first pitch, or in either of the two rain delays today, we spent a lot of time in a variety of places talking about the auditions for next year, right? And how you want to see you, being like me and you, the royal you, everyone, the team, fans, everyone, want to see more from a variety of guys for whom there are question marks, right? So David Schneider, Will Wagner, Leo Jimenez, Addison Barger, Spencer Horwitz, Ernie Clement, Stuart Baroa, they all played today. Mm-hmm. Like they all essentially played today, all with a variety of results. And obviously first, we'll see what Schneider says, John Schneider, because you hope Leo Jimenez is all right. He was removed from the game with a right knee soreness, so we'll see if there are any updates on him. But let's discuss the guys who are somewhat on the fringes, because I think we can all agree, despite some lulls to a certain extent, especially for Horwitz, but Horwitz and Clement, they're in there next year, right? I'm not sure what their exact roles would be. I personally would pencil in Horwitz right now as a starting second baseman, or maybe the strong side of a second base platoon at the very least. I would think I would put Clement, even if he's not the starting third baseman, because it would seem they have some options in free agency. But if you're only backfilling from within the team, the most obvious candidate for the third base spot is Ernie Clement. But even if he's not the starter, he's on the bench next year. But so if you disagree, you can let me know. But let's take Horwitz and Clement out of that conversation. You're still left with Will Wagner, Leo Jimenez, who again was removed from this game with a knee thing, Addison Barger, who had a late home run off of Jorge Lopez, or David Schneider, who again continued to struggle today.
Yeah, David Schneider really fighting it. I think I'd like to start with David Schneider, because we saw Spencer Horwitz as a result of David Schneider being pinch hit for. He struggled mightily, and including today now, show if we sort of look at this recent sample for him, now 0-16 with 9 strikeouts in his last 6 games. Really bad. 2 walks mixed in. Those are the only 2 instances in which he's been on base. But, you know, anytime you're being pinch hit for, that's enough of an indication to say, hey, you're really struggling here. So I'm not sure what they frankly do with David Schneider at this particular point in time, because things are not going well. The quality of at-bats have been very poor. Yeah. You know, they haven't looked good. So he's in a difficult stretch right now. You're not seeing him as frequently featured in the starting lineup. This today was his 8th instance starting in the month of August out of a potential, I think it was 14 or 15 games that the Jays have played so far this month. So clearly, you know, performance is playing a factor in terms of how it's affecting his playing time for the time being. That was probably the most notable development, or certainly observation from today, is just seeing the continued struggles of a David Schneider. Apart from that, I mean, nice at bat from Addison Barger to homer. I mean,
he crushed that.
He destroyed that ball. Dead center field, no doubter, crushed it. Handled velocity as well to absolutely deliver that bomb to dead center in the 9th inning. And I did want to also highlight, Sho, out of all those guys that we've sort of talked about, the ones that are competing for jobs and auditioning for different roles in 2025, I thought Will Wagner had another strong day. Now, I think if I'm looking at it right now, 1-for-3 ends up finishing in the box score. It's nothing that's going to jump out at you.
Had a walk as well, I think.
Had a walk, yeah. So 1-for-3 with a walk. Overall, though, I thought all of his at-bats were very good. I even made this point as we were watching the game. I said, man, does he cover the strike zone incredibly well? Like there's not a single pitch, regardless of location, that you don't feel like he can cover if he is able to identify it correctly. And I even went back and I decided, let me just take a peek at the at-bat, you know, each AB individually and break it down in terms of the volume of pitches that he saw. Six pitches in his first at-bat. Second, in his second AB, he also saw six pitches. Third AB was five pitches. And then his last AB, in which he recorded an out, it was seven pitches. But he's doing a tremendous job of working at-bats, getting himself into favorable counts. And for a guy that's only been here for less than a week, this was today his fourth major league start, his fourth major league game, he kind of has a really mature approach. And it speaks to, it's evidence of those numbers that we saw in the minor leagues, the .315 batting average that he had in AAA. Mm-hmm. It's real. It's legit. There is some significant upside here in terms of what he can be, and he really stood out to me yet again today with his approach in the box and the quality of his at-bats.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm not ready to give Will Wagner a starting spot on the team next year. Obviously, he's obviously not going to get jettisoned, and neither is Joey Loperfido, who also played today, actually, very late in the game. But yeah, neither of them are getting jettisoned because they're so new to the organization. Doesn't necessarily mean that, I mean, they could play really well for the rest of the season and still not be with the team to start 2025. It's a very real possibility. And of course, that specifically, I think, does hinge on what the Blue Jays do in the offseason, right? Like, if they go out and get two or three bats, and I don't know, three bats seems like a lot, right? But if they go out and get two major league quality bats, and that the cascading effect is that it pushes everyone down a little bit, there's a chance that anyone who's in the conversation for being the 23rd to 26th mm-hmm. man on the roster could all be in Buffalo next year, even if they do deserve to be on the team, right? So I think that's just like a reality of where the Blue Jays are at in terms of who's getting ABs right now. But I do agree with you that Will Wagner, in a very short period of time, has given you enough quality ABs to make you think, okay, there's something here.
Absolutely.
And there's something to be worked on for him. And again, are we penciling him in for like the second base spot next year? No, I don't, at least I'm not. And I don't think you are either. But ultimately, when you look at what Will Wagner is, I think he's a little bit of an older prospect. But even with older prospects, you don't always get the kind of results you're seeing from Will Wagner. But I think it's enough to say, how much do you want to see from him going forward? And I think you're going to ask that question about everyone, certainly. And I think the answer is, I want to see more. Like, I want to see him play more.
Yes.
And again, there are two lefties on the mound between today's game and tomorrow's game for the Cubs. Justin Steele today and Shota Imanaga is scheduled to take the mound tomorrow. And I mean, gosh, Imanaga, I mean, he was an all-star this year.
Oh, he's filthy.
He's been absolutely nasty since coming over from Japan. So that's going to be another tough assignment. I wouldn't be surprised, frankly, to see Will Wagner sit tomorrow.
Yes.
Because I'm not sure they want to, even in like after a handful of games, want to throw him in there against two straight, very good lefties. And we're not even talking about guys who are like kind of dicey lefties, like guys who are not in the top end of rotations. We're talking about two of maybe the best left-handed pitchers, maybe in baseball, mm-hmm. in terms of starting caliber pitchers. So you probably won't see Will Wagner tomorrow, but I do expect, especially with the Reds coming to town on Monday, he's probably going to play a fair bit at the Rogers Center starting on Monday for another brief homestand. So I am curious to see how much playing time he gets going forward starting on Monday. And who knows, maybe we're wrong. Maybe he does play tomorrow for all we know, but I think that probably is likely to happen, you know, in terms of the next 48 hours. David Schneider, though, yeah, it's been a tough watch for old Schneids. There was a text here from Jane Regina, 590-590, name and location. We need Davis to get a streak going towards the end of the season so he can be packaged in the offseason, or else he'll be playing himself off the team by opening day. There was another text from Mike in Victoria. Time for a mercy demotion for Schneider to get it right. This was about an hour ago he sent this in, but at the time, 2-for-32 since July 31st, an .063 batting average. It's true. I mean, even today, you see, when was this? And I guess it was against Pearson, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Pearson, and by the way, I mean, how are you going to go two innings against Nate Pearson of all people and not score a single run, right? Like, you load the bases with, I think, one out, and correct. You don't score at all against a guy I would think they all know extremely well,
yes.
in Nate Pearson. Not a great look. I know Springer very narrowly missed the home run. It was kind of funny to see Springer and Pearson on that AB both kind of chuckle to themselves because they must know each other quite well, I would imagine. But end result is Pearson, who got the win today, by the way, for the Cubs, allowed a whopping zero runs.
That stings, man.
That does sting. But a part of that was David Schneider, right? He just wands over a Pearson slider, like three pitches Pearson threw to David Schneider, a four-seamer for a called strike, a four-seamer for a foul ball, and then a slider for strike three. So it's just, It just the ABs to go contrary to your point for Will Wagner, the ABs for Wagner look pretty competitive. Even if he's not getting results on all of them, the ABs for David Schneider right now look anything but competitive, I would say.
Oh, you're consistently seeing non-competitive at-bats. And it's emblematic of somebody who right now, when he steps in the box, has no game plan or no idea of how to adjust. He looks completely confounded when he's in the batter's box. It's just difficult for him pitch to pitch to play that mind game with the pitcher and trying to predict or trying to forecast what the next sequencing of pitches might be.
Yeah.
He just looks completely uncomfortable when he is in an at bat, and it feels like for whatever reason, and maybe now this slump that he is currently experiencing is certainly compounding things from a mental standpoint, but it's as if, you know, clearly they're all major leaguers. They're all professional athletes. They are preparing. They are putting in the work, and whatever his preparation looks like, the moment that first pitch comes in from the pitcher, it feels like he's trying to process things in the moment,
yeah,
as opposed to being very much committed to his process and to his approach. And that is never, never a good sign for a hitter. And clearly in that at-bat that you referenced with regard to Pearson, three pitches, sat him down, made it look very easy, very effortless for Nate Pearson, because he comes with the hard stuff and then he says, okay, now I've got you in a leverage position. I'm just going to throw a slider over and make it. And it wasn't even the most competitive pitch, right?
It really wasn't.
I'm going to throw it anyway. That is the waste pitch that everybody talks about when you're in an 0-2 count. Pitchers love throwing it. Something that's not going to do any harm or damage. Throw it away from the strike zone. He does it. He gets a swing and miss. It's a sign. David Schneider really, really fighting it right now. Evidence of how much he is struggling. And he needs something to change. And I don't know if, yes, the Jays are in a position where they're not competing for anything of consequence. But maybe you do see when a guy like Jonathan Class A is potentially in line for a promotion here,
sure,
Davis Schneider is the one that is going down and needs more seasoning and an opportunity to reestablish himself, rediscover that stroke, that swing that we've seen him have success with down in Buffalo at the AAA level.
Yeah, I've been pretty reticent to, because you're not the first person to suggest that in terms of him going down to Buffalo. Like, I think Jen in Toronto, who texts in pretty often, she has texted in to say, show, he needs to go down. A lot of people have called in and said it. I've only been reticent to say that that's going to happen because if you're talking about sending people down, I mean, the more obvious guys to go down, I would think, even with David Schneider struggling, are guys like Stuart Baroa or Addison Barger, for example.
Yeah.
But honestly, like, if he's struggling to this degree, because I talked about this with Nick Ashbourne on Jay's Talk like weeks ago, and he was struggling then, and things haven't really changed. Like, it's been like half a month or more where things have continued to snowball in a negative way. I can't help but think even now that while the obvious candidates to go down are guys that are a little bit lower down the pecking order, because he's struggling to such a mighty degree, I can't help but think that it would just be a good mental reset for him just to go down, even if it's for like the bare minimum time that you go down when someone is, because you know you have to go down for a certain amount of time and you can't be called back up,
yep,
for I think it's like 15 days or whatever it might be. It might just be a good mental reset. And maybe he does get called back up when rosters expand in September or when someone has to go on the IL, for example, if that's the case. But like, if Bo is going to come back off the IL, honestly, if you're talking about guys who are going to go down to the minors right now, you need to make space for someone right this second. It might just behoove David Schneider,
yes,
to get a mental reset. And I say that as someone who really likes watching David Schneider. I think there is actually a spot for him on the team next year, but not if he plays like this.
I'm with you. I think David Schneider, when he's right, is a major leaguer.
Yeah, I think so too.
I don't think he's a guy that's a quad A player. I think he can be a major leaguer. Is he an everyday major leaguer? Maybe not. But is he a roster player? Absolutely, he's a roster player when he is right. And I do think we saw enough of a sample before he started struggling between last year and into the early portion of this season to establish enough of a judgment and a fair judgment of him being capable of playing at this level. I don't think that's far-fetched. Now, if we want to actually look at things, show entering today, excluding this game today in which he goes 0-3, if we look at the last 55 games for him, that takes us back to June the 1st. He, Sho, is hitting 168. Oof. 168, three homers, just eight extra base hits in his last 55 games.
Well, I can't imagine that went up after going 0-3.
Exactly. Probably went down slightly. That average probably dipped slightly. He hasn't homered, Cho, and I had this in front of me as well. His last home run, you have to scroll far back. It came on June the 22nd. He hasn't homered in more than a month. So I do think we often reference this when we discuss prospects a lot, young players, and we say, is it really beneficial for a guy to be at the major league level if they're not playing every day? If that player who was previously playing every day in the minor leagues is coming up just for the sake of coming up,
right,
but is only getting a handful of bats at bats every week, does it make sense? And I almost feel similarly about Davis Schneider right now. What is he how is he benefiting from stepping into the box once every 2-3 days, going 0-4, and then sitting on the bench again for a couple of days? Because inevitably there are other guys that are performing better, and the Jays also need to make sure they are getting a look at various younger players that they have injected into their system. So as a result of that, I would suggest, as you proposed, why not just allow him to go down, have that bit of a mental reset, play every day, be consistent in whatever position he's playing, whether it's second or left field, and just say, it's okay. You're fine. This happens. It's part of the process. We still believe in you. Go down there, reset yourself, and then we'll bring you back up when the time is appropriate.
We got a text here at 590-590. Before we go to the phones, it just says, you guys are delusional. Davis Schneider is finished. We got to sign your text so we can give you a shout out.
Yeah, please.
Even if I disagree. I just think, look, he's really scuffling right now. He absolutely is. But I don't think 2 months is enough of a sample size to say this guy is finished as a major leaguer. He is probably, I think, because of his age, closer to a finished product than not. But at the same time, I think we've also seen enough from him. And we probably saw the peak version of Davis Schneider essentially right away, because he was hitting the absolute cover off the baseball. We're talking about all these things about Will Wagner also hitting the cover off the baseball, and it's still not as good as what Davis Schneider did when he first got called up last year. So I hope he pulls it together. But it's true, I mean, if he doesn't pull it together between now and next season, pardon me, now and the end of the season, then by next season, I think we're going to be having a very different conversation about Davis Schneider. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line. It is always open. Let's first, though, go to the phones, and let's go to Shlomo in Scarborough. Shlomo, what's up?
Hey, guys. Couple things I wanted to note. Interesting to see Merriweather and Pearson having success against us. We got no guys throwing heat in our pen like that, especially since Garcia and then Romano's down and Garcia's out. So it's just interesting, not a good time for this run office. Also seeing our old pal Mesa come and throw a scoreless inning in New York.
I saw that.
Yeah, it makes you question the Pete Walker effect. I don't know. It's not his, not all up to him, but at the end of the day, it's just very interesting that change of scenery. We see these guys looking a lot more serviceable. Next thing on my list, you guys mentioned Clement. I think he's the only guy showing us that he's a major leaguer from this these bubble guys so far, just because the defense is really good. And he's also been pretty much, I guess, debatably our second best hitter this year as well when you look at average.
Shlomo, is real quick, is Horwitz on the bubble for you or no? You're like, he's a done deal. He's on
I
the
think
team.
He's still on the bubble.
Okay, all right.
He's cooled off too much for me. He's also not an above average, like he's decent at second considering right. he's never mm-hmm. played there, but there's no versatility. Clement's more versatile, you know, mm-hmm. like Horowitz, man, I hope he doesn't turn into a pumpkin like Schneider, you know, these are older prospects, and they're older prospects for a reason. They're not the sure shots, you know, they could come and get hot and then the league makes the adjustment. So Clement's the main guy that I'm thinking is a valuable piece just because you like the fact that he can put it in play, and you also like the fact that he's above average with the glove. Think back to our 2015-16 team and how good everybody was on the diamond, how good everybody was at the plate. Mm-hmm. We need to make sure that we have those kinds of players moving forward. We're not getting real at-bats here, which takes me to this situation here. That Baroa at-bat, that was one of the worst major league at-bats we've seen like this season, especially in a high-leverage spot. I don't understand it. I guess they're giving these guys a shot because they want to be able to maybe throw them into some trades, but like that makes no sense. At least swap it. Let Baroa be the pinch runner and give the at bat to Joey Loprivita, who apparently has incredible power. It was interesting to see Barger hit that one out. I don't have that much faith on him. Don't love his defense. I love the fact that he's got a cannon for an arm.
Sure.
So I do have some hope in him, but I mean, he still hasn't been consistent enough with the bat. But I do like seeing his arm in the outfield. Like the fact that he can throw, 100-mile-per-hour missiles from there is pretty promising. Didn't love that throw he made. Was it today or yesterday across the diamond? Actually, it was today to Vladdy. I thought he needs to – these guys, this isn't the tri-league. We need to see these guys make these plays. I guess in the other thing I didn't like, too, back on the management was the fact that we saw that double steal with Vladdy up at the plate. That was ridiculous. But makes me think maybe we're playing for the Ethan Holliday sweepstakes. So in that respect, Schneider did a great job. Let's lose more games. Let's get that number one draft pick. I know it doesn't make as much of an impact. It's harder to get in baseball. But, man, they're saying this kid's better than his brother. We put him up in the next 3-4 years. He's on our team. We need pieces like that, especially because this front office is not that good at drafting.
Hey, Shlomo, appreciate the call as always, man. So a lot there, certainly. Let's talk about Barger real quick, just because I think I kind of had something similar to say about Barger. And then he hit the home run, and I thought, okay, well, that's not going to necessarily erase everything we've seen from Barger over the course of his relatively short major league career. But I was pleased, and you mentioned it already, to see the Barger home run, especially off of a very quality reliever in Lopez. Really ambushed him there. It was like a 96-mile-an-hour fastball, kind of in the lower part of the zone. And he still went down and got it. And Wrigley Field, not the greatest place to hit home runs, especially when the weather is how it's been today with the ball, the humidity, and so on. But maybe that helped, actually, in terms of the humidity. But the point being, Barger, I think, did somewhat redeem himself with the home run. Having said that, when you look at the breadth of his major league career, I think Dinelli, for me, he is likely to be, and again, he's a younger guy, so again, he's less close to being a finished prospect, a finished product, as maybe Horwitz and Schneider and Will Wagner are, for example, because they're a little older. But Barger generally is someone I think is going to, unfortunately, unless he really turns it around, be someone who gets caught between being one of those quadruple A players, too good for the minors, but maybe not good enough to have a staying power in the majors. I wonder where you fall on Barger, because I like what I've seen from him in the briefest of flashes. And I think today is a great example of that, because like Shlomo said, made some couple of not so great throws, but still has a rocket launcher attached to that right arm, has some obvious power in terms of hitting the ball as well. But at the same time, how often are you going to see that action come through in in-game situations?
His arm is great. There's no doubt about that. Whether he's been in right field or playing third base on occasion, the arm has flashed, and it's real. That is a legitimate major league asset defensively. When it comes to the offensive side of his game, and I've made this point before, and even today watching the game, I raised it while we were here watching. I think what Barger's going to struggle with is how effective his swing is at covering all the entire gamut of pitches he's going to encounter from a pitcher. And what I mean by that is, you see, and this is, in baseball parlance, it's stepping in the bucket where he's got that really heavy leg kick. And because of that exaggerated movement, generally, it makes it harder for those kind of hitters to cover breaking balls. And so when he's on time, when he's out in front, is he going to be able to do things like we saw today where he drives that ball and uses all of his natural ability and talent to just crush a beautiful, majestic homer to center field?
Yeah.
Of course, he's capable of that. But generally, when you're in the batter's box, you have to be as nimble as possible. And by virtue of the way he swings the bat and his just mechanics when he's in that box, it's going to be difficult for him to cover every single pitch. And as a result, you're seeing him struggle in various situations because you're caught in between routinely. Okay, am I hunting the heater here? Am I sitting back and waiting for a breaking ball? How do I adjust in those situations? And I think that is where I think we need to see the biggest growth from Addison Barger, is being a more balanced, more well-rounded hitter and working through some of those mechanical flaws inherently that are in his swing, because the power is real. There's a natural ability for him to just hit the ball as far as possible.
Right.
That you can't teach. It's similar to Joey Loperfido. He has natural power. How do you tap into that? How do you foster that in a way that will now allow them to actually be good major league level hitters? He's in that exact same camp as Joey Loperfido is.
Yeah, I think when it comes to auditions for 2025, which the rest of the season is going to be about, I mean, he has a lot of runway ahead of him. He certainly can turn around, I think, a lot of people's opinions, including ours, but he does have to show more, essentially, especially when he's at the plate. And, you know, maybe tighten it up a little bit defensively, but I think he's been fine defensively, but I think you need to see a little bit more because, I mean, Shlomo was talking about Ernie Clement. I mean, the only two, I think, right this second, natural or most obvious choices for third base are Clement and Barger, right? Like, I think I'd still rather see either of them than like Vladdy at third base, for example. And I'm not really saying that to knock Vladdy. It's just that I think you prefer to have what he gives you at first base and see what someone else has who you don't already 100% know about at third base. But again, the answer to the question, who's the 2025 Toronto Blue Jays starting third base, it might be neither of those guys, right? It might be someone who's not even in the organization right now. I'm not even saying it's going to be Alex Bregman. It just might be like literally anyone else. And if that's the case, then it's pretty much impossible to answer that question. Before we go back to the phones, I did want to get to the double steal situation that Shlomo brought up in the seventh inning, I believe, top of the seventh inning. They score their first run in that inning with a beautiful bunt from Varsho. Give him some credit. There was actually a lot of bunting in this game by both teams. But Varsho puts down the bunt, scores the run. Great small ball to manufacture a run in that situation. I think you do want to see more of that going forward. But, you know, kind of made irrelevant with the double steal situation. Like, it kind of felt like that was a situation that could have snowballed positively for the Blue Jays, and it didn't. Springer gets thrown out trying to steal third base with two runners on. And again, I totally agree with Shlomo. If you want to try a double steal situation with most batters at the plate, all right. Like, I'm not inherently opposed to it. Do you really want to try a double steal with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. standing at the dish? I mean, anyone else at the plate, honestly, go for it. Frankly, like the way the season has gone, the way most people have been hitting on this team, honestly, go for it. I don't really, it's not going to bother me too much. But Vladdy at the plate, like your top dog, your most dangerous hitter, is kind of silly, right? I mean, I know Vladdy flew out right afterwards, but still, even with that hindsight, it's just, why even take that chance? I don't know. It's kind of nuts.
You even got to think in a weird way, Sho, how does that decision change the complexion of Vladdy's at bat? He was ahead in the count. They choose to steal for whatever reason, whether that was intentionally put on by the Jays, that's a coaching move, or George Springer's just trying to read the situation. But this is something that circles back to a bigger theme surrounding this team in a way.
I know you're not a huge fan of their base running.
The base running really upsets me and irritates me. I made this point yesterday watching the game where I felt like base running was a big factor in them not winning the game in nine innings and potentially not extending the game in extra innings. And today there's a prime example where the Jays finally sort of get to the Cubs. They're applying pressure offensively. They get to Drew Smyly. Here comes Hodge into the ball game and you have him on the ropes. Opportune time to score with your best hitter at the plate. Why are we overthinking it? Why are you running into outs on the bases? You cannot afford to kick yourself in the rear end and put yourself behind the eight ball. Stop hurting yourself in those situations. And the Jays routinely, and I referenced this, statistically, we'll never be able to prove it, Joe, because statistically, they grade out as a fine base running team. They don't run into a ton of outs. They are effective and very efficient when they steal bases, although the volume isn't very high. They are efficient in that regard. Mm-hmm. They do okay running first to third, second to home, all these things. But if you watch the games day in, day out, I can assure you there are many instances in which we're kind of like, that was an interesting decision. And today was another example of that, where they found their one inning in which the offense seemed to come alive and they're stringing together a few at-bats and opportunities are there, what happens? You run into an out, you make a poor decision, and then it costs Vladdy an opportunity to do damage and drive in some runs. And, oh, by the way, he flies out on the next pitch, maybe in part because he's thinking, geez, why the heck would we do that in that situation there? I'm going to work a good at-bat. I'm going to be patient. I'm going to try and zone in and look for a specific pitch. And instead, no, we run into an out, and boom, just like that, our rally is dead. You killed your own rally. It made zero sense to me.
You remember when, was it Brett Laurie who tried to, did he try to steal home with Joey Batts, Jose Bautista standing at the plate?
I seem to recall
that. And I mean, that's like a really egregious example. I mean, the fact that I can even kind of recall that, I think it speaks to the fact that it was one of the worst things I'd ever seen even then. But I'm not saying today is quite as bad as that, but I didn't love it, to Shlomo's point. 416-870-0590, 888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Adam in Thornhill. Adam, what's up today, man?
Good evening, guys. How are you?
Good. We didn't have to extend this game through a third rain delay, so that's always a positive.
That's true. And it was a fairly interesting game today, actually, with all the small ball and the bunts and all the attempted double plays, that attempted sweet tag by Wagner there off the Vladdy throw. There's some cool stuff in today's game, and of course, getting burned by Pearson Merriweather. Shlomo sort of stole some of my thunder. I was going to call in and say the same thing about Ethan Holliday is expected to be one of the top prospects in next year's draft. The younger brother of Jackson Holliday, who's an absolute phenom, as we know, son of former major leaguer Matt Holliday. He's 17 years old right now, going to be 18 in the draft next year. I mean, this is a piece that you build on. And I understand that tanking in general, it's just a subject that's been much debated in the Toronto sports media with the Leafs over the years when there was Brian Burke and all that, and they should be tanking. And it's sort of a taboo thing to say on a professional team that you should almost like purposely lose to try and get a high-end prospect. And I understand that baseball is a different structure. But here's the thing. We have more information, more data, more knowledge on upcoming MLB draft picks than we have ever had in the history. It's not the same as the NFL that's six rounds. It's not the same as the NHL that has seven rounds. This was always a 50-round draft. Now it's down to a 20-round draft. So obviously there's a lot more crapshoots in terms of who you're drafting. But the top-end guys who are being drafted, the Skeens, the Holidays, Charlie Condon this year, There are some guys who are more or less as close to no doubters as you can get. And Ethan Holliday, I know it's sort of very early and you're putting pressure on a 17-year-old, 18-year-old kid, but this seems to be one of those scenarios in these years that you kind of have to go for it. And to win meaningless games in August and September, when you know you're absolutely out of it, when you know that you have so many decisions to make regarding what you're going to either do with Bo and Vladdy, what you're going to sign moving forward, what you're going to trade, and the mess of your farm system, but not just the drafting, but also the development of how you brought along prospects these last 9 years, you can't really afford to throw away a major opportunity to try and get a guy who the industry believes is going to be the next big superstar. And the thing is that I believe it's Oakland and I think it's Colorado, two teams that are behind us right now, cannot get the first pick because of these new...
It's Oakland and Chicago, the White Sox.
Okay, so it is the White Sox. Yeah. I wasn't sure if it was the White Sox or the Rockies. So basically, right now, if you look at the standings, okay, let's assume that Texas will pass us. It's the Angels, it's the White Sox, it's the A's, it's the Marlins, and the Rockies. So two of those teams cannot get that number one pick. So you have essentially, if you want to think of it this way, like a 1-in-4 shot at it. I know it's a little bit less than that because other teams are also involved in the lottery. And yes, the Guardians got it on a very low percentage. But my point is, you got to take a shot and you got to try and go for that because that could be a major game changer for this organization. Anyway, that's what I got for today. Thanks, guys.
See, Adam, appreciate the call. Thanks for joining us here on Jays Talk as always. So, okay, for those who are not familiar with how the draft works, just because I think we're going to field a lot of draft-related questions for the Blue Jays fans faithful going into next season. So Adam and Shlomo are right that Ethan Holliday is the presumptive number one overall draft pick in next year's draft. By the way, Matt Holliday must have great genes, by the way. Like, he just great genes, great DNA from Matt Holliday and the Holliday family. But the way the draft lottery looks right now after the Blue Jays lose, they're now lost two straight. They're 57-66. Now, I'm not sure. I'd have to look at the scoreboard to see if anyone's finished playing of these teams. But the teams ahead of the Blue Jays right now: the Colorado Rockies, the Miami Marlins, Los Angeles Angels, the Washington Nationals, and the defending World Series champion, the Texas Rangers. That might not be the case, but that's the top six in terms of best or worst record, I should say, in terms of best odds. So the Rockies and the Marlins both have a 23.49% chance to get the number one overall pick. The Angels have a 14.23% chance. The Nationals 10.68% chance with the number one overall pick. The Rangers 7.83, the Blue Jays 5.55%. So the way it works is there's a lottery for the top six picks in the MLB draft, and teams that are that give rather than receive revenue sharing dollars, of which the Blue Jays are one of those, are not allowed to be selected in consecutive lotteries. So it essentially means that, I mean, the Blue Jays did not have a top six pick last year. They can this year, but if they do get a top six pick this year, they will not, like the White Sox and the A's are ineligible this year, they will not be eligible to receive a top six pick, I guess, in the 2026 MLB draft. So I think it kind of does, in a certain way, Daniele, put the impetus on the 2025 draft when there is such a high draft pick. I think the problem with it, I mean, obviously, just if you're tanking, and I don't think the Blue Jays are tanking, but if they are tanking, you're trying to put yourself in the best position to get that top draft pick. But because it's a lottery now, it's not just a straight, you're the worst team, you get the number one overall pick. Because it's a lottery and has been for a couple of seasons now, it's kind of tough, right? Like, it's kind of tough to put your fate in the hands of chance, so the hands of a couple of ping pong balls, essentially.
100%. It's a very volatile, it's not a strategy. I said that hope is not a strategy. That pertains to what the Jays did last offseason coming into this year. I think it is, I understand the sentiment. I do. And I think it's fair. I also think it's probably appropriate and pragmatic to have that approach and that thought process. That being said, it's difficult to go down the road of saying, okay, in theory, let's root for the team to lose.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Because that's hard. Because now, it's, you know, I'm trying to think, what other sports still do it? I know the NFL does it, but apart from the NFL, where if you have the worst record, you get the first pick. Mm-hmm. It feels like out of the core four main sports in North America,
all lotteries, yeah.
They're all lotteries with the exception of the National Football League. Yeah. So this is part of the process. I understand that, you know, the further down the standings you finish, the odds increase. But even if we look at, in this instance, for the Rockies and the Marlins, who are currently tied for the worst record in the sport and are 1-2 in the lottery standings as it currently sits today, it's 23.4%. That is what you're banking on. In theory, if you have the worst record in baseball, is to have a 23% chance at landing the first pick. I'm not saying that landing Ethan Holliday wouldn't change the landscape of your franchise potentially. It might. It very well help you usher in the next wave, the next generation of Blue Jays baseball. That being said, I think it's difficult in baseball to really strategically tank by virtue of the way the sport is played. And in addition to that, because of how the lottery process unfolds.
I agree with you. Like, I think baseball is a harder sport to tank in because of the sheer randomness that of the sport in a full nine inning game, or really any game, right? But over the course of 162 games. And I think too, I mean, there's a text here on the text line from Nick in North Bay who says, how can you ask a team to tank? Tanking sounds good, but in theory, it isn't realistic. How can you ask Vlad to strike out on purpose and the other guys as well? And I think that's a valid point from Nick, because I mean, we're going to spend so much time talking about auditions for 2025, and they know that's the case, right? So that's because, again, when I say they, the players know that's the case. So they're not going to, like, stop trying. Jobs for them, even if it's not with the Blue Jays, jobs are on the line for them for the rest of their hopefully long major league careers. And if they, you know, what are you going to do? Like, I suppose that the job of tanking, I suppose, wouldn't really be up to the players. It would be up to the management, right? Like, it'd be up to demoting players down to the minors and bringing up guys who maybe don't deserve to be there, or guys who, you know, are quote unquote inferior in terms of how what their skills might be. Like that's what it would be essentially. And I don't really see that happening because the season is already lost. Unfortunately, I think if you could trade the other major difference, I think when it comes to tanking in baseball versus tanking in any other sport is if you could trade draft picks,
great point.
I bet it would look different. Honestly, just in like a general
that's
sense,
a great point.
It would make probably more sense for tanking. Cause then you could in theory go and like the Rockies could trade picks or the Marlins could trade picks. And I'm sure they probably would have a bazillion times over by now.
Yes.
If you could trade like your top 10 pick or a top 5 pick and do what like the Bears we think did in the NFL when they had, they didn't finish with the worst record this past season, but they had the number one overall pick and drafted someone who might be a franchise quarterback in Caleb Williams. But that's because they made a deal with the Carolina Panthers the year prior, right? But like, you can't really do that in the world of baseball.
No, that's a great point, Joe. And also think about how that would change the entire landscape as it relates to asset management.
Right.
If you were a team like the Blue Jays even, and certainly, as you alluded to, it applies probably even more aptly to teams like Colorado and Miami or the Angels right now at this particular juncture. Chicago, the White Sox, of course. But imagine being a team that is clearly in the camp of we are sellers. We are not remotely close to being competitive. Imagine having the opportunity to acquire multiple draft pick assets at a trade deadline, let's say. So hypothetically, instead the Blue Jays were going into this draft, they might have two or three opportunities in the draft lottery to move up, whether that's to acquire to get the first overall pick or to get a top 10 pick. Imagine having that opportunity at your disposal. But because it is so, the rules are very stringent when it comes to draft pick allocation. And the only way in which picks change hands is through compensatory measures. But when it comes to baseball, this is it. And I was just toying around with this. There's a website here that actually you can like play through different lottery simulations. I've done like 10 of them.
Is this the Tankathon website?
Tankathon.
Yeah, they're a great resource, actually.
Going through it, I have yet to have the Blue Jays land on the first pick. And in fact, they've moved down more often than they've actually either stayed stagnant at number six or have moved up in the lottery process.
Well, you know what? I just hit it three times and they moved up to four. So there you go.
Hey, well done. There you go. But it is, as we just alluded to, unpredictable and very volatile. Yeah. It's difficult. It is not a science. And that is certainly when it comes to this front office, if you know anything, they're going to try and make it as scientific as possible to ensure that they have a formula on how to build their team and how to maximize their assets.
Actually, just in that same simulation, when I hit the sim lottery thing and the Blue Jays moved up to four, actually the Texas Rangers moved up to the number one overall pick, which would be absolutely absurd. No one wants to see the defending World Series champion get the number one overall pick into the following year's draft. I guess the next 2 years draft. That would be actually pretty wild. 416-870-0591-888-888. 60590 star 590 on your cell. Before we hit a break, let's go back to the phones. Austin in Zurich joining us here on Jay's Talk. Austin, what's up?
Hey there, guys. What's up?
Hey, doing great, Austin. What's on your mind today? What do you want to talk about?
Chris, I'm the dispatcher. What's great today. He was like throwing the pitch at the pitch. I was really impressed of him.
I was too. Hey, Austin, appreciate the call. Thank you for joining us here on JSTOG. I think Austin's point about just, you know, being impressed with what Bassett was able to give you today, because specifically he had to pitch through multiple rain delays.
It was pretty interesting.
Honestly, I genuinely was impressed with Bassett because of that reason primarily. Five innings pitch was the stat line for Bassett. Five hits, three runs, all of which were earned, two walks, five Ks, 76 pitches, 43 strikes in those five innings of work. And yeah, I mean, I find it difficult to entirely decide how to judge a Bassett start on a day that includes two rain delays. And again, it's a good thing they were brief enough to let him come back out not once, but twice. But I think he knew. Like, Bassett is a veteran pitcher. And we talked about this a little bit on the pregame show, that Bassett last weekend when he was pitching against A's got shelled in the first inning, and he did go on to give up one more run, so seven earned runs over the breadth of four innings pitched against the A's last weekend at the Rogers Center. But I mean, you know, he gave up six runs in the span of two outs essentially, and then didn't give up or only gave up one more run over the course of, I guess, 3 1/3 effectively, which I think was encouraging, but he had to get pulled after a certain point. I think they'd seen him enough at that stage of the game. And I think knowing that was the case the last time out, knowing that there were multiple rain delays today, Justin Steele did not stay in this game particularly long, which I think is totally valid. But Bassett, I think, knows that he has to push himself a little bit further because of the bullpen situation we were talking about during the delay, which is to say it's not a great bullpen situation, all things considered. And I mean, after Bassett came out of this game, the bullpen actually did acquit themselves pretty well. You got to give them some kudos and some credit for that. But I mean, if he had exited in the second inning instead of getting through five innings, it would have been a way different ballgame, you would think, than a 3-2 loss. I mean, yeah, I know they lost today, so a loss is a loss is a loss, much as a win is a win is a win. But I mean, ultimately, that you take into account the probably multiple side sessions he did, even in I think what was a total of like about an hour in terms of rain delays today. I got to say, I was impressed that he even got to the fifth inning with 76 pitches. I know it seems low, but he probably threw an additional like 25 to 30 pitches like out of everyone's prying eyes, essentially, in the Cubs bullpen out there in the outfield.
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, Ben referenced this at the end of the broadcast. It was officially a 55-minute rain delay. So if you include that into the equation, you know, I agree with you, Sho. I thought overall he was fine, and you could see when he came out of that second rain delay, the first inning of work for Chris Bassett was a bit unsettled, in the sense that his velocity wasn't where it usually is. He was hovering right around 89, 90, 91 miles an hour. And by the time he came back out for that second inning after the second delay, his velocity had ticked back up to 92 on his sinker, which is generally where he sits with his velocity. So I felt like as the outing progressed, as he endured a couple of rain delays, he was able to still acquit himself very well. In fact, I actually thought like the curveball, for instance, was quite effective at times. And really, he got burned. If you think about it, obviously the first pitch of the ball game where Ian Happ takes him deep before the initial delay, and then it was one swing of the bat that really did him in, which was Michael Busch just over the outstretched hand off the center field wall of Dalton Varsho. Yeah. And all things considered, all things said, if we combine what he did today with the latter portion of his outing on Sunday, he's now in his last eight innings allowed 4 runs. And you can live with that. You can live with that type of outing. He was able to minimize damage, and I thought overall it was fine. It was fine and more encouraging given that he was shelled in that first inning against the A's on Sunday, to see this type of performance, given that he had to stop and start on multiple occasions, that he threw, as you alluded to, probably 25 to 30 pitches behind closed doors with nobody else watching to stay warm, to endure a 55-minute delay as part of this process. Overall, a fairly decent and productive day for Chris Bassett on the mound.
He threw 27 sinkers, 13 cutters, 12 curveballs. He threw eight pitches today, so he threw 5 other pitches, but all of them were essentially 6 times or less. So it was interesting to see his reliance on the pitches he doesn't use a ton, but he did get a fair amount of whiffs on the cutter today, and let's be honest, probably wasn't helped that much. And honestly, Justin Steele and other Cubs pitchers, the Blue Jays bullpen as well, none of them were particularly helped by some god-awful umpiring in terms of calls.
No.
But I think it, by the end of the game, I think it evened out enough that I'm not sure I can just say, oh yeah, only Chris Bassett got hosed, right? I think everyone kind of did equally. So
for sure.
I guess I don't want to say that's what you want, but if it's harming both teams equally and it's a one-run game, I don't know. It probably evens out, even though you just want to see none of it, frankly, right? But right away, before we hit a quick break, the two-out, two-run triple from Michael Busch, it was a tough result, which, again, I think kind of marred the outing a little bit more, because if it ended up being 5 innings of one-run ball from Bassett, I think you could have lived with it, certainly. I mean, three earned runs, I think you can live with it as well. The bats did not perform super great today when it comes to the Blue Jays offense. But I said this to you when it happened on the Varsho non-catch in the outfield. I wasn't 100% sure, because the fence over the outfield at Wrigley Field, it doesn't go straight up. It kind of like hangs at an angle,
at an odd angle
over the outfield, just like about a foot or two, maybe
it's
a couple
like
feet.
A basket type of situation.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
see it all the time. The balls land in there and it's almost like it gets caught in what looks like a basket sort of thing.
Yeah, and it kind of like rolls into a little bit of a divot almost on the other side of the fence, essentially. But I kind of wondered, in real time if it hit just the edge of the fence when it was coming down to Varsho. But I think the other thing too is I truly believe even if it was a little high, I think that's a catch Varsho makes if it's not at Wrigley Field, right? Mm-hmm. Because let's be honest, like if he's at the Rogers Center and he's throwing his body around there, or really at a lot of ballparks, not just Wrigley, not just the Rogers Center, and really it wouldn't be at Wrigley Field, but I think Wrigley's one of the few places it's like this. If he's throwing his body around out there, he's crashing into like a fence or like a padded wall effectively. If he's doing it at Wrigley Field, he's crashing into a brick wall. Like, it's covered by ivy, but it's into a solid brick wall. I mean, we saw Cody Bellinger earlier this season essentially do that exact thing out there in center field.
Yep.
And he dove for a ball, laid out, he made the catch. I think good for Cody Bellinger. He smashed into that wall and he broke a couple of his ribs. So mm-hmm. I think you have to be cautious when you're out there at Wrigley Field. I don't think anyone's blaming Varsho or really anything on that thing because he's been so good on the breadth of the whole season. But I just wanted to point that out because I can't help but think that most of the time Varsho probably makes that catch. That's Daniele Franceschi. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're going to step aside, take a quick break. When we come back, we'll hear from the skipper. You're listening to Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
No, I mean, I think if there's a pitcher that's well-equipped for Rendon, it's Chris. And he did a good job with Pete, went down, kept himself moving, mentally stayed locked in. I think if it got a little bit, you know, longer, once you get to like 45 minutes or an hour, you start to think about it. But I think it being early in the game, too, kind of helped him stay in there.
So that is John Schneider being asked if there was any ideas, any thoughts to remove Bassett after the variety of rain delays in the ballgame. So it looks like they were pretty set on keeping him in there. And I mean, again, yeah. I said this to you before, Daniele, but Bassett is someone who I think does go out of his way to like lobby to stay in games. I mean, I'm sure all pitchers do, but Bassett, I think, did understand what was at stake here. And I mean, ultimately, Blue Jays do lose 3-2 to the Cubs to lose the series. But I mean, I'm not sure I'm going to hang all of it on Chris Bassett, considering the honestly like challenging circumstances that are when it comes to mentally staying ready, physically staying ready through two rain delays. Honestly, a very nearly a third rain delay, but thankfully that was not the case. That's Daniele Franceschi. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're here until the top of the hour, so still a couple of minutes left here. If you want to text us, 590-590, name and location. We just heard from John Schneider, Daniele, on Chris Bassett. I did want to hear, because we talked a lot about him today, I want to hear about Addison Barger. And John Schneider was asked about the power that Barger shows, and he did show it off on the solo home run off of Jorge Lopez in the top of the ninth inning in this game. But let's hear the skipper discussing the replacement third baseman later in this game.
A lot, really. You know, left side, you know, he's got tools. He's got a, you know, cannon for an arm. He's got a lot of power, you know, so he's kind of one swing away all the time. You know, going dead center there is pretty impressive, but he can do that, you know, and I think he's getting more and more comfortable.
I do wonder, that's Schneider talking about the power that Addison Barger has. I do wonder if power is enough for Barger, you know what I mean? Like, he kind of has to have it all, and I'm not sure we have seen all of it click in the same game quite yet. And then even if we did see it, you kind of have to see him do it multiple times. You can't just have him flash in a pan a little bit, flash in the pan, and then not do it again. So you kind of have to see some more consistency from him.
Yeah, agreed. This era of baseball, as we know, Sean, it's predicated on three true outcomes, right? It's a strikeout game. It's a power game. That is essentially what a lot of hitters pride themselves on as it pertains to having lengthy big league careers and getting paid in the process. Kyle Schwarber has made himself not just a good major league player, but a very useful major league player because of what? His ability to consistently hit the ball over the fence and doing it on a regular basis, routinely. So it's not to say that you can't be a one-dimensional player or of that ilk in order to prolong your career and have a sustained presence in the major leagues. It's possible.
Yeah.
It is challenging, though, and we are living in an era where it's more difficult than ever before to be a hitter. There's no question. It is more challenging today to hit a major league baseball, to step in that box, and to have effective, productive at-bats than it ever has been historically. As I said, when I look at Barger, I think there are a lot of players, as we know, and we've seen it. We've seen it with guys like Jose Bautista. We've seen it with even Bo Bichette for a more recent example. That leg kick is a timing mechanism that a lot of these guys like to use. But I think with Barger, it's got to become less pronounced in order for him to have his timing less affected when he's guessing incorrectly on pitches. And so it's convenient when, yes, you guess right and you're on time and you're able to hammer a fastball. Sure, it's great. It looks beautiful. But what's tricky is when you get caught in between, and we find that happening routinely with him. That's where I think we need to see more growth and development for him. It's about refining that approach and that mechanical side of his game offensively to tap into more consistency. Because yeah. I do still think, although we love power, we love it in this game, you still have to be doing it consistently in order to have it actually matter and count at the big league level.
Before we go, Daniele, we're going to get out of here in a couple of minutes. I wanted to chat about tomorrow's pitching matchup with you. Shota Imanaga, we mentioned this already, is going to start for the Cubs. And I mean, if Justin Steele is their best starter, then Shota Imanaga is at worst, that I think I would say their second best starter. And he has been, I mean, I got to say I've quite enjoyed watching him just from a neutral perspective. Just coming over his first year as like a true quote unquote rookie in terms of Major League Baseball rules, because obviously he pitched for a long time in Japan, but it was really cool to see him come over here and like pretty much dominate. Like he dominated right away. He did have a bit of a rough stretch essentially right before the All-Star break, but he's been great all season long. So I am curious to see with a 3.16 ERA and 131 strikeouts. I'm curious to see how the Blue Jays lineup acquits themselves against Shota Imanaga, but Baden Francis, I believe, is starting for the Blue Jays tomorrow. He went a career best 7 innings the last time out. I'm curious what you're expecting from Baden Francis in his follow-up after what is probably the best start of his career, essentially.
Yeah, I'm interested to see as well, because he's coming off the back, as you alluded to, his best outing as a pro in that previous start, and looked great in doing so. You know, I think it's been a mixed bag with Bowden, because at times he's looked very much the part of a guy that could be capable of being a fifth starter for you at the major league level. And then there are times where you're saying, man, a lot of the off-speed stuff just doesn't play consistently, and he's not going to overpower you with his velocity. So it's just, again, with a lot of these guys, it's especially when you're not able to overpower teams with your velocity, it's about setting up pitches. It's your sequencing and your location of pitches. It's as simple as that. And so when he does that effectively, he can be a serviceable major league starter. But it's when he gets in trouble when the location goes awry because he can't overpower guys. The breaking ball isn't always there. And it's just about repetition in his delivery at this point for Bowden Francis. I think that's what's interesting. And I do wonder, this is a good Cubs lineup. It's going to be a good test for him tomorrow with a group that is very much flush with quality left-handed bats in this lineup.
Yeah, he was able to work pretty effectively off of the four-seam fastball with a lot of his other pitches in that most recent start. So will he be able to command the four-seam fastball? How will it look? It's pretty lively, but I'm interested to see if he can command it. It's always lively doing these shows with you.
Thanks,
Sho. A lot of fun, Daniele.
I love it, Sho. It's great. I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
We appreciate you all being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by the local family-owned Crown Risk Control Centers in Nepean and Orleans. Ontario. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Find your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. For Daniele Franceschi, Ben Shulman, Chris LaRue, Andrew Adams, Nick Blackmore, I'm Sho. We're out of here. Julia Kreutz in with me tomorrow. Have a great Saturday night, everyone. We'll talk to you later.